Oh, if you are a Democrat, you are probably feeling pretty funky. Hello, this is Henry Roman, and this is your latest installment of America in the Now. I am your host, and I am so happy to be here. I'm especially happy to be here. Wow, what a challenge it was for me to get to to get to the studio today. As you all know, I actually work for a living. I have a job in Cambridge, and I go into work every day, and I take the train. And when the train's on time, I'm doing well. And when the train's not on time, I'm not doing well at all. And that's the part that I find quite annoying. Excuse me a moment while I'm trying to get this thing to work. Let's see. Nope, I'm gonna have to put it there. Put it there. Put it there. Okay. I also do a live Facebook feed, so bear with me here. Okay. Sorry about that. So every day I go into work. I work for a large-ish corporation. I earn my daily bread, and there are days I really love my job, and there are days I look forward to retirement. But it's not really because of the job, because the job itself is wonderful. It's just that as I get older, I don't have as much energy, and there are days that I just kind of want to stay home and don't want to do anything. I think we all feel that way, and I think if you asked most Americans, would you rather be at home or would you rather, go to work every day? I think most people would probably say, I'd rather stay at home. And so I've been having those kinds of days in my life. But it is I will say this about that. Regardless of how bad it is always a pleasure to come into the studio. There have been a couple of times when I haven't had the opportunity to come into the studio either because the trains were woefully delayed or I had some kind of appointment. But those days, I always feel like there's a hole in my schedule. Speaking of a little bit of a hole in my schedule, for those of you who are big talk show aficionados, you must know, unless you've been under a rock, because even the liberal media covered it, that Rush Limbaugh, who's been a talk show host for, oh, over probably 40 years, was recently diagnosed with lung cancer. It was one of those things that it's almost as if you kind of knew it was coming and you were hoping that it wouldn't happen, but it did. So he shared with his audience yesterday that he had been diagnosed. He'd been having some symptoms, some kind of trouble breathing. I know that since I started listening to him when I was a drug rep in New York City back in 1988, I really enjoyed his delivery. He had a local show at the time with a co-host, and you could tell that he was just dying to get rid of her as quickly as he could because he had a local show, and then afterwards he had a national show by himself. And eventually he got rid of his local show because he didn't really need it anymore. But I still continued listening to him, both his local show and his national show. And that was, wow. So 1988, where are we now? So 32 years that I've been a listener. And there have been times that he's disappointed me when I discovered that he had a serious drug problem that caused him to lose his hearing, by the way. Those of you who don't know that, taking opioids for long periods of time can lead to hearing loss. And but he had a hearing implant put in, and then he was fine. And I mean, I really enjoyed listening to him. But one thing he always talked about is how much he enjoyed his cigars, and how he was, impervious basically to any kind of ill effects. That there was nothing wrong with smoking, and that smoking was good for you. I mean, he said it tongue in cheek, of course. But whenever he would say that, I'd always say, "Oh, Rush, please, please don't advocate cigar smoking," because there was a time when a lot of young people smoked cigars because he was a cigar smoker. And so directly he led to a lot of people becoming addicted to nicotine. And so this news that he's got lung cancer was kind of sad. I read through a lot of the postings that people had discussing the news, and it was about, I'd say, maybe 70-30, 70% supportive of him, 30% pretty nasty. I mean, there were people who were saying that they were going to be dancing on his grave. There were people that, you know, they had other, they were saying that other bodily functions, they were going to relieve themselves on Trump's, I mean, on Rush Limbaugh's grave. I'm sure that people would want to do that on Trump's grave as well, but I thought that's kind of nasty. I mean, sure, okay, he represents the right, and there are people who hate him because of his ideals, but to that extent, you would desecrate someone's tomb just because you didn't like their politics? I mean, how stupid and how petty can that be that your life has so little meaning that you think that this is actually a good thing to do, some kind of worthy protest? I don't get that at all. And of course, we had the Super Bowl. Now, I am not a Super Bowl listener. It's not my thing. I don't really care for the Super Bowl. I don't follow football that much. I'm a New England transplant, and so football is not a big deal for me. Although I probably shouldn't be saying that, especially if I'm seeking political office. But so I didn't really pay attention to the program. I did follow up with some of the commercials that they had, and I thought some of them were really, really wonderful. There was one commercial that just, oh my goodness. It wasn't even a commercial. It was a, I think it was Fox News that took 3 minutes to run a, or NFL, actually, I think it was the NFL, that took 3.5 minutes to run what is it? Oh my goodness, I forget the name of the singer now. A Johnny Cash song. That was so absolutely beautiful. I saw that, and it just made me cry. I'm going to go ahead and play it right now. You can't see it, but you'll be able to hear it. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. Sorry about that. Right now, it's showing the Medal of Honor winner, the youngest Medal of Honor winner, walking. The youngest Medal of Honor winner was William Kyle Carpenter. And that man looks just as ragged as a ragged flag. Amen. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Oh, my goodness. My goodness. The Chinese Empire is quickly showing that it is not all that it appears to be. Before I provide my China update, allow me to deliver my disclaimer. First of all, I am not against Chinese people. I have great respect for them, their 5,000 years of history, their can-do spirit. If you need something built quickly, the Chinese will build it quickly. As an HR person, I will tell you, not that I'm trying to put positive attributes on certain ethnic groups and negative attributes on other ethnic groups, but I will tell you that the Chinese workers that my company has hired, they have been absolutely wonderful. I enjoy working with them. I have great respect for them. And so whenever I provide a China update, this is not a criticism of the Chinese people. I'm still going to get in trouble with the Chinese government because I do disagree with everything about the Chinese government. Do not be mistaken. They are communists. Communists are against capitalism. They may use capitalism, but only insofar as it promotes their goals, and that is to control people and to control the mechanisms of government and control how wealth is not only created but distributed. So do not fool yourself if you think that there's anything about capitalism or communism that is similar to capitalism. It is not. One of the things about communism as well is that because they control the medium of all the mediums of communication, they can turn up the volume of good news and turn down the volume. Turn up the volume of good news or turn down the volume of bad news, and this is what they have been doing with this coronavirus outbreak. Believe me, they would not have quarantined 60 million people if this was not a serious issue. And it is. The coronavirus is a serious issue. It is terrifying. It is something that, I'll tell you, if I were a Chinese person, I would be just as terrified. I've seen videos that I don't know if they're real or not, but the Chinese government, their apparatuses, they are actually locking people into their apartments. If people refuse to be quarantined, or I guess leave certain areas, I don't know. I don't even understand how people can agree to be quarantined or not. But what they actually do is they actually lock people into their homes. They use sections of steel tubing to rig the people's doors so that they cannot open their doors. And since most people live in high-rise apartments and their windows are looking over, you know, a precipitous drop, the only way they can get in and out of their apartments is through their doors. And so if these doors are locked, they're effectively prisoners. I don't know how these people are making provisions for food, for water, for light, but this is terrifying. The pictures, that there was a doctor that was punished because he actually showed pictures of body bags. He's telling people this is a serious matter. How did this happen, by the way? For those of you who don't know, the epicenter of this coronavirus came from a meat market. A meat market in China or in the East, in the Far East, is not like a meat market in America. I've been to butcher houses in the States. When I was in college, I used to work for a professor. And he was involved in vision studies. And so in order for him to conduct vision studies, he needed raw materials. And so we would go to the slaughterhouses to get fresh eyeballs. We would pull them right from the skulls of the chickens or of the cows. We'd wrap them up in foil and put them in coolers with dry ice and transport them back to the lab. And then afterwards, we would extract the retinas. And then we would process them, run them to a centrifuge, extract the retinas, and do our he would do his research with that. But the slaughterhouse that I went to in Virginia, I mean, it was like a factory basically. But the prime ingredient or the raw material that would go into the slaughterhouse was basically the pigs or the cows or the chickens. They would come in through one end. They would be dispatched, I guess, efficiently, if you want to use that word. They were killed, And then they were, the cows were hung upside down. They were bled. And then the hides of the cows were ripped off. And then the cows would be, there would be inspectors who would inspect the organs of the cows. They would make a determination as to, you know, how healthy these animals were. And then they would be cut up, packaged, and so on the other side of the factory, you would have these nicely, you know, packaged, you know, hamburgers and hot dogs and steaks and all this other stuff. For the chickens, it was very similar. I mean, similar process. But at the end, you would have basically either whole chickens or cut-up chickens or chicken parts. It was efficient. It was actually surprisingly clean. I mean, the parts where the animals were bled obviously were a little bit messy, but they were contained and they were set up so that by the time the animal went to the next station, they pretty much had been bled dry, and so there was no, excretions or any kind of bodily fluids that would fall on the floor or kind of be interlaced with anything else. So that's my experience of a slaughterhouse. Well, the slaughterhouses in China are not like that at all. It is basically a disgusting affair. It is incredible to be there. It stinks. You've got the commingled blood and guts and feces and every possible other bodily fluid that's been there. The detritus may have been hosed off with a hose the day before, but it's not really clean per se. It's not disinfected per se. As they slaughter an animal, you've got a mixture of all bodily fluids from different animals that are combining and kind of sitting together. The person that's doing the butchering will butcher a dog. And then we'll reach over and we'll wipe his hands on his coat, and then go butcher a cow, and then go butcher a lemming, and then we'll butcher a monkey, and continually is just wiping his hands, wipes his face. You've got all these viruses from these different animals that are not, nature never intended tropical animals to mingle with, let's say, animals from cold climates, or animals from the jungle to mingle with animals from the savannas. And so you've got all these bacteria and all these viruses commingling. Eventually, you get a virus that mutates, and it's transferred to human beings. And that's exactly what happened in that market in Haiyang province, I think it was. I know I'm probably Humong province. Oh dear. Well, wherever the Chinese city is from. that's the city where they eventually traced the epicenter of the virus to that city, and so the Chinese have been trying to contain that outbreak, but it has not been as easy as they thought it would be. Of course, it's a virus. Think about your kids. Think about sending your kids to school. Now, my wife is a principal at a school. The kids there go from preschool to 10th grade. When a little kindergartner sneezes, they don't say, "One moment, please, let me grab a tissue. I'm about to sneeze." And then when they sneeze into a tissue, and we'll, you know, wipe their nose, and then afterwards we'll, you know, find a place to dispose of the tissue, and then we'll perhaps wash their hands or use sanitizer. Absolutely not. A little 5-year-old, a little 4-year-old, let's say, when they sneeze, it's a full-blown cloud of mist that is spread. And then they'll touch you, and they'll touch their hands, and they, you know, so very quickly spread whatever disease they have from one kid to another to the teacher. And, of course, then the teacher or the principal brings it home to the spouse, who then has to, is subjected to the diseases of little kids. It has not been a pleasant winter for me. In some ways, I look forward to my wife not working in education ever again, just so I don't have to deal with all of the sicknesses that she brings home. But that's how little kids are. they are little, one doctor calls them little petri dishes, right? And each petri dish contaminates the other. So imagine a city of 60 million or a metropolitan area of 60 million where some people have good hygienic, you know, good habits and others don't. And there are some people that are spreading diseases perhaps unwittingly or without knowing, but they're spreading diseases. And then these people, they're sick and they want to get the best care possible and they have a family member in the U.S. So they get on a plane and while they're on the plane, they're sneezing and coughing and that virus gets spread from Beijing to New York City. And then in New York City, when that person gets off the plane, the people that are in that plane, they're going off to Des Moines, Iowa, to Washington, D.C., to Miami, Florida, to greet their family members. And before you know it, you've got this pandemic spreading everywhere. That's kind of where we are. I think and I hope that there are enough precautions in place, and the Chinese have done enough to try to contain this virus. But if this thing mutates and becomes even more deadly than what it is now, there could very well be a breakdown in governments. I'm not trying to scare anybody, please. I know it does sound like I'm trying to scare people. I'm not. But I'm saying that, you know, the absolute worst case scenario is that this thing becomes much deadlier than it is right now. Now, some people may be saying, you know, Henry, that's not going to happen. That's not the case. Well, you know, it did happen. It happened back in 1918. Oh, one moment. I need to change the... I realize that I've got my backup Facebook camera right now. Oh, dear. I think I did something here. Oh, we go. So I'm using my backup camera. Anyway, I was mentioning that we have a potential issue with this virus, that in 1918, the Spanish flu wound up killing several million people around the world. The mortality rate for that flu was about 2%, which is, I think it's 100 times more than recent flu viruses. Most recent flu viruses, the mortality rate is about 0.02%. So if this thing ever had the opportunity to become like a Spanish flu, I mean, let's face it, you know, we don't really have a whole lot of tools to protect us against viral infections. We're in big trouble. So I'm glad that the Chinese are doing what they're doing. I think at first they were trying to deny everything, but they realized they need to get serious about this. But it also shows that despite all of their talk, they're still in many ways, they're still very much a third world nation. We've got Chinese people at work that are collecting supplies to send to China. And they're trying to get as many things as possible from family members. Same thing happens in the Philippines when there's a disaster. All the Filipinos kind of band together to help. So I also offered assistance to my Chinese friend saying, what do you need? Let me know, because there are several of us in this company that will pool our resources and we'll get you, you know, what you need. One person did say that she needed masks for her family, and I went ahead and got her 100. She was very happy about it. And these are the things that we have to do. We have to help each other out. So those of you who listen to the show, I am not anti-Chinese, never have been, never will be. I'm certainly against the communists, because the communists never have the best interests of the people at heart. What they have at heart is their continued survival. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. And for some people, it is the end of the world. But as we know, the world continues rotating. It's not the end, but it's the beginning of something interesting. I've got a guest on the show, and I think it's my friend Marcus. Marcus, are you there? Oh, let's see. Marcus, are you there? Oh, looks like I didn't get my friend Marcus. So I'm gonna go back to my REM. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Oh, my goodness. Why am I playing REM, End of the World? I love this. I love this song. We have had such incredible... Oh, I've got my caller coming in. Let me see if I can get this call. Hello, this is WARA AM 1320 in Attleboro, Massachusetts. What's your first name?
Marcus.
Marcus. I figured you'd call. Hey, sorry about that. I tried to put you on, but I couldn't. So it feels like the end of the world, doesn't it? First, we've got a Senate vote that did not go the way the Democrats wanted it. Then we've got Iowa caucus that now all of a sudden people are wondering, is this a, you know, is a fix in? What the heck is going on, Marcus?
You know, I don't wonder any of that, because as I said months ago, all of this is distraction from the real thing that's about to happen.
And what's that?
Okay. In June, we will know whether or not we get to see his taxes.
Okay.
Again, everyone continues to underestimate Nancy Pelosi. Okay? Everybody does this, and they do so at their own peril. The Supreme Court is going to weigh in on truly how much oversight does the House truly have over the presidency.
Oh.
What does it mean? What does it mean when it says that Congress can subpoena information from the president? What does that in turn mean? Does it mean that you can utilize it for legitimate legislative purposes? Does it mean that you have to, regardless of what the request is? Or are there limits? And that's what really is being tested.
Marcus, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Finish your thought.
My thought is this. Two things. One, not surprised by what went down in the Senate, because what we're continuing to find out is who's in the loop. Who's part of the scheme, okay? And there's more people coming that are part of this than we ever thought possible. Number two, Nancy slipped one through on everyone because they weren't paying attention. The real issue is the taxes. That's what you got to see. Who's loaning people money? Where is it coming from? Where does the money go?
Uh-huh.
The James Carter theory of criminal investigation is undefeated, okay? And if you don't know what that is, look it up. But it'll basically tell you everything you ever wanted to know. Henry,
all right.
What sayeth you?
I'm going to tell you that I have it on good authority that Trump stole pancakes from his cousin about 20 years ago. Therefore, it shows that he's a thief. Therefore, he cannot be trusted. Therefore, he must be impeached. I mean, what you're telling me and what I'm saying, in my opinion, sound equally ridiculous. And I'll tell you why. What was the first thing that they tried to get? I mean, they have been trying to impeach Trump since Inauguration Day, when the Washington Times Post said, it was Washington Times, said, today begins the impeachment of Donald Trump. So first they tried to get him with Russia collusion, with that phony paper that was actually paid for by the Democrats. And that didn't work out. Then they tried, you know, what the second thing, I've already forgotten. That didn't work. So then they've decided to do an impeachment on the third party person overhearing someone saying something about something that they heard when someone else was in the bathroom talking to a friend about a phone call that they received. That's about almost as ridiculous. So there were two articles of impeachment that were forwarded to Congress. But I find it interesting that the one thing that they didn't forward was the quid pro quo thing. You do this for me, I'll do this for you. That's basically what they're saying, is that Trump used his position of power in order to get something. And yet that third article of impeachment never made it. Is that because maybe after this, after he's acquitted in the Senate, Nancy Pelosi is going to say, we've got another investigation coming? You know, at a certain point, I believe that I speak for a lot of just regular old Americans out there that may not be Republicans and may not be Democrats, but just people that are trying to go about their business. They're going to say, enough going after this guy. And it's going to be to the point where Trump will murder someone at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, open the door, dump the body out, and nobody's going to impeach, because they'll say, well, you know, it's going to be too much trouble to get it all the way through the Senate. He's going to be acquitted anyway. Forget about it. I know there's that concern that this has set a precedent, but I believe that this impeachment process has set a dangerous precedent on two fronts. The first front is, whether you like it or not, Trump got away with something. If you think that he did something wrong, he got away with it because there were no witnesses. He's going to be acquitted. So some people are saying this is going to raise the bar for impeachment, where there has to be indisputable facts. Because right now, we have allegations and hearsay evidence and innuendo. Well, we think he meant this when he said this. That's really what, in my opinion, that's what they've got. But then there's the other school of thought that says this has politicized the tool of impeachment, where if you're a majority House Democrat and you've got a Republican in the House, you use impeachment to remove him. So you're basically undermining the will of the people. 63 million Americans voted for Trump. He won the Electoral College. Whether he won the majority of the votes, well, we're not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic, and we have an Electoral College. That is how we elect presidents. He won. The people have voted. The people decided. It is not up to Congress to remove him simply because they hate his guts. That's the way I see it, and that's the way a lot of people see it.
I 100% agree with you on that. And you are absolutely right. It does set a dangerous precedent. Here's the precedent that has now been set. If you, if the vote is to acquit, which again, no one's under any illusions. Everybody knew this was coming. Okay, if you didn't know this was coming and you were shocked, pay more attention. Number one, it's saying that the executive branch can effectively tell Congress, you're not getting anything, period. Everyone who cooperated, okay, now keep this in mind, everyone who cooperated, they did under subpoena, under threat of what would happen to them from the executive branch. Because the executive branch told them, do not cooperate. And they chose to cooperate. Okay? So it's now saying the president can withhold legally requested documentation that goes back to Congress. There's no oversight from the House. There's no oversight from the Senate. The president now is being said, you can do whatever and we can't check you. That's the danger. And it becomes this for me.
Did I lose you? It looks like, oh dear, we just lost Marcus. Marcus, hopefully you can figure out that we lost you. Call us right back and we'll continue the conversation. We're at 508-222-1320. 508-222-1320. That was my friend Mark, and I do call him my friend. We've been friends for many years. We don't agree on very much, and those of you who are longtime listeners know that. But one of the things I like very much about Marcus is that we can agree to disagree and we still remain friends. I've actually had friends that, because they don't agree with my politics, they decide that they don't want to be my friend anymore. That's Marcus again. One moment. This is WARA AM 1320 in Attleboro, Massachusetts. What's your first name? This is WARA AM 1320 in Attleboro, Massachusetts. What's your first name?
It's me again.
Oh, okay, Marcus. Yes, please continue.
See,
so we were just continuing.
They tried to censor me for telling you all the truth.
It's a conspiracy.
It is a conspiracy. The president is now unchecked.
By the way,
that's the danger.
Let's continue the conversation. But I do want to talk about conspiracies with you. Okay, go back another couple of sentences, because we lost you about a minute ago or so.
Okay, so if the president can stonewall, okay, and ultimately that's what's being done.
Okay.
And stonewall Congress. And again, Adam Schiff, whether you like him or not, made an excellent point. He's saying that the president's defense was that they didn't authorize the subpoenas. They didn't fight for them in the courts. And down the street, same day, the Department of Justice was saying, well, the subpoenas aren't valid. So what option then does Congress have if you won't cooperate with the subpoenas? Well, they can then impeach. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that you have to enforce the subpoenas through through the court system and then tell the courts that the subpoenas aren't valid. We can't do that.
We have to go back to the original argument that we had, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and that is, Trump, why should Trump cooperate if during the congressional investigation period where the case had to be made because it's in the Senate where they evaluate the evidence that's been presented. They don't have a second investigation. It's Congress's job to launch the investigation, and yet Trump's lawyers never had an opportunity to cross-examine witnesses. They never had
don't
an opportunity to
don't
present.
Don't cross-examine in investigations, Henry. You and I both know that. Not where you do that.
But they were blocked. They were not allowed witnesses. They were not allowed in any way to present their version of events. So that this was basically a presentation by the Democrats as to why Trump should be impeached. He had basically no input. So why should he cooperate? Why should he put more fodder?
I agree with you on that. But here's what I'm saying. Here's my question for it. Okay. Did the Republicans were they allowed witness testimony as part of the investigation? The answer to that is yes. Whether it was equal representation, that's up for debate, okay? But they were they allowed to question the witnesses? Yes, because I remember sitting there watching Jim Jordan fire away at people. So you can't sit there and say, well, he didn't get a chance to call his witnesses. Well, let's talk about the witnesses. We're now at trial. We're at trial. And trial is where you call witnesses. That's your defense. If you're withholding the evidence, and Henry, you and I both, everyone out there knows this as well. If you defy subpoenas, they show up at your house, they show up at your job, and they take you to jail. End of story. You cannot do it. That's true.
For me,
I want a fair trial. That's why I said last week, call everybody. I want to hear from everybody.
And my response was, at what point do we stop?
I agree with you on that. But I gotta say this while it's fresh on my mind. If you listen to the argument from Jay Sekulow was that. And it's something that Trump does very well. He said, we're just going to tie you up in litigation, and we're going to be here for a long time. That's his playbook. That's literally his playbook from his businesses. Anytime anybody sues him, he ties them up in the courts.
But why did the Democrats, why were they in such a rush to complete the proceedings and then basically sat on it for so long until they delivered it to Senate. You are making some valid points. I do have to give them to you. But the point is that this
two,
was...
Two of those weeks, Henry, two of those weeks are Christmas break. The Senate's not in session. You can't deliver the articles of impeachment if there's no one to deliver them to.
Oh, they were there. Then they would have made arrangements. See, this is the part. This was political.
This was political. I absolutely agree with you.
The Democrats, no Republican voted for articles of impeachment in Congress, and I think the same thing is going to happen. Oh, looks like I'm running up against a break. Looks like I'm out. But if you can, why don't you hold on? Because I did want to hear your opinion about what happened in Iowa yesterday.
I can't even get into it. We'll save that for next week. I'm coming home. I'm watching the State of the Union.
Okay, good. Let me know how it goes because I'm not going to be able to catch it until later on.
All right. Beautiful.
All right. Thanks for calling, man.
All right.
That was Marcus. I always enjoy speaking with him. He's a great guy. I don't agree with him. I still don't agree with him. Every week we do this, we beat each other up and then kind of wind up. I bet on the same side. So I don't know if I'm going to convince him or he's going to convince me. But I think our positions, as you can tell, our positions are kind of hard. But at the same time, we don't engage in name calling. We don't engage in anything. We're just trying to kind of debate the finer points of what's happened versus what we think should happen. That's what democracy is about. Democracy is about expressing yourself. The First Amendment right, so very important. Freedom of the press, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, freedom to assemble peaceably and to petition the government for the redress of wrongs. I have to go on break. I'm going to be on break for about 7 minutes or so. Please stay on or go to the bathroom to watch some TV, but please do come right back. You're listening to WARA AM 1320. This is America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. I'm positive and convinced that the Democrats are going frickin' crazy. So the caucus results are starting to be released. Here are the results so far. Buttigieg, this guy needs to change his name. I'm going to call him Smith. Smith, 27%. Sanders, 25%. Warren, 18%. Biden, 15%. I must admit, I'm surprised. I did not think that Buttigieg did as well as he did. I figured that Sanders would have a much stronger showing. But this just goes to show you that the Democratic field is very, very, very weak. These guys are in trouble. They can't figure out who is the best candidate to run against Trump. Now, I have my opinion. I think that this should be a pure capitalism versus communism play. Let Trump and Sanders duke it out on the ideological battlefield and see who comes out on top. I have my predictions, of course, as to whom I think is going to win. But the fact that the most important event for Democrats, this is the Iowa caucus. This basically, it sets the stage. The way this whole system is set up is if you do well in Iowa, you're not guaranteed, but out of the last nine Iowa caucuses, seven of the last nine winners of the Iowa caucuses have gone on to be nominated, not to win, not to win, but they have been nominated as the Democratic representative to run, you know, in the for president. So when you have such an important event that was totally, totally screwed up by whatever, I mean, it makes people think. Number one, you know, where were the adults? Why didn't they test this? Why did they change things? And people are going to wonder whether these results are valid or not. Unfortunately, you know, I made a post on my Facebook page, and I jokingly said that I don't go to the conspiracy breakfasts, but I get memos. You know, I get a memo of the meeting results. And that's really the case. I mean, this to me, it would be easy for me to say that they were trying to rig the results so that Biden can win, because the establishment kind of wants Biden to win. They're terrified that if Sanders goes up against Trump, he's going to be just absolutely ripped to shreds like a pit bull. I mean, Trump is just going to just eat him for lunch and then pick his teeth with his bones. Buttigieg doesn't have in my opinion, doesn't have a snowball's chance. He's just, you know, okay, so I'm going to speak honestly, guys. So America decided to vote for a black president, right? Because it made people feel good. Oh, I'm voting for a black president. But I don't think Buttigieg has enough of, like, vote for me because I'm this. I don't think people are that willing to. I could be wrong, but I don't think it's going to happen. So that's what's, in my opinion, that's what's going on. So definitely, Buttigieg, he's not going to get the nomination. He's a bit of a divisive figure, even within his own with his own party. He's a bit of an arrogant. You know what? Sanders, I will say this: I don't like his politics, but at least he's been consistent. He's had the same message for, you know, the 100 million years that he's been alive. He's been preaching this socialist communist idea to the dinosaurs, and so, you know, he's an old man and he's set in his ways, and that's who he is. And whether you, if you want to vote for him, vote for him, right? So 25% of the Iowa people voted for him. Warren, I mean, I don't even know why she's in the running. Pocahontas will never be president. No one will vote for her. She is too divisive a figure. I know that if she does become the nominee, I'm going to be one of those people dressing up in Indian costumes to protest at her at every speech that she makes, to remind her that she was a thief. She stole the seat of a bona fide Indian. She stole the seat so that she could get where she is now. Everything about her life has been about stealing from other people and about getting into the front of the line using whatever trick in the book that she could use. And so therefore, in my opinion, she is not capable. I mean, I wish she weren't even our senator. I don't know how she keeps getting elected. Biden, I feel sorry for that man. I mean, you know, I'm sure that in the 50-plus years that he's been in D.C., you know, he's done some good work. But when he says, I'm going to bring change, well, why didn't you do it before? Why didn't you do it when you were a vice president? Why didn't you run for president right after Obama? I mean, why now? Why? I'm glad that, Bloomberg didn't even show up on the results. I mean, the guy, let him spend his money. You know, he's a multi-billionaire. How many houses can you buy, you know, after you have 17 homes? How many more boats can you buy? He wants to be president. Let him spend his money. Maybe he in some other country, he can buy his way to the top. But Americans are not that stupid. I see his ads. They're plastered everywhere. But Americans are not as stupid as he thinks they are. Americans cannot be bought, at least not for what he's offering. And so there we are. The only other candidate that I thought had a snowball's chance to provide real competition to Trump is not even being mentioned. And that's Gabby Gifford. No, not Gabby Gifford. I even forget her name. But I'm terrible, absolutely terrible with names. I should have this on a piece of paper. Let me see. Tulsi Gabbard, not Gabby. Gabby is one of my little friends. Tulsi Gabbard. She's running for president, but nobody even, I mean, she doesn't even register just because, unfortunately, no one knows her. She's not a real candidate, at least in many people's eyes. We've already done the Hawaiian candidate thing. She's from Hawaii. We're not gonna be electing another Hawaiian. It's just not gonna happen. And so I think Tulsi, in some ways, she's really a Republican, but she knows that in Hawaii, as a Republican, she'll never be elected. So she has to be a Democrat. So the Democrats kind of see her as actually a Republican. But you know what's so bad about that? To have a Democratic candidate that embraces many of the ideas of the Republicans and some of the ideas of the Democrats, I would think she'd be the perfect candidate. But for some reason, Hillary Clinton targeted her, and now Hillary and her are in this full-blown battle where Tulsi Gabbard is actually suing Hillary for libel. So there's no way that the Clintons are going to support her. And so basically, after all is said and done, and after you take all the candidates and put them in a bag, add a little pepper, a little flour, shake them up, when you throw them out into the fryer, what you have is you have all these different pieces, and they're different, but there's no preference. That's the problem. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. You know, politics is not for the weak, for the weak-minded or the weak-willed. I will share something with you, my audience. I was actually approached by the Republican committee in Massachusetts to run against the sitting Democrat here in this district. And I said I would be interested in exploring a run. So I am not officially announcing my candidacy, because if I do, I think one of the things I have to do is I have to give up my radio show, because someone who's running for political office cannot have a radio show at the same time. So I'll have to negotiate that. But until then, for those of you that are interested, I'm heavily leaning toward saying yes and running as the Republican candidate for the State House here in Massachusetts. I'd love to hear your opinions on that if you're interested, because if interested in sharing it, because I certainly am. So we were. I was playing Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better from Annie, Get Your Gun, the 1950 movie. The reason I played that is my show is going to be preempted by half hour because there's a show coming on. But I wanted to read an article from the Epoch Times opinion piece. This was from Thursday, January 30th. So it's a few days old, but it's still very pertinent. It was written by Michael Walsh. I'm going to try to read it very quickly. It says, with all media eyes on the Trump impeachment farce currently wending its way to an inevitable conclusion of exoneration, it's crucial to remember where this whole charade started, not where it's headed. From the moment that Donald Trump outraged Democratic sentiment in 2016 by having the effrontery to defeat Hillary Clinton in the presidential election, the entire apparatus of Leftism Incorporated has collectively rallied to overturn the results. Democratic animus against Trump had many causes. Hillary's hurt feelings and incandescent rage, minorities, baseless charges of racism, even before Trump took office, open borders advocates, justifiable fears that the new president would start to take control of the border crisis, thank goodness, and the press's shunned shock in seeing its confident predictions of a Clinton victory evaporate on the night of November 8th. Indeed, on Inauguration Day 2017, the Washington Post helpfully announced that the campaign to impeach President Trump has begun, and I end the quote. In short order, the Democrats settled on the notion that Trump had somehow conspired with the Russians to influence public sentiments against Clinton and the Democrats and possibly even affect the vote totals in polling places across the land. As proof, they offered... Oh, dear. Oh, okay. As proof, they offered an anonymously sourced dossier on Trump compiled by a former British spy at the behest of Fusion GPS, an opposition research company staffed by former journalists and sourced to Moscow. It was a salacious farrago of humor, speculation, and outright falsehoods, helpfully shared sub rosa with members of Congress and left-wing journalists, as well as the intelligence community operatives sympathetic to Clinton and the outgoing Obama administration. Indeed, the late Senator John McCain handed a copy to former FBI Director James Comey in December 2016. I mean, this goes on and on. Let me just I'm going to kind of try to summarize what this article is talking about. Basically, what it's saying is, since the beginning, the left has done their absolute best to cast doubt on the legitimacy of President Trump. Well, if he won, it was because the Russians helped him, not because 63 million Americans voted for him. And if 63 million Americans voted for him, it was because they were fooled, because Trump was working with the Russians to fool them. Therefore, the Trump presidency isn't legitimate. This impeachment is about trying to say Trump is not a legitimate president. The things that he has done has not been in the interests of this country. It has been to serve his own interests. Does that sound familiar? That's the dialogue, the narrative that keeps coming up time and time again. What Trump does is for himself, and that's all he cares about is himself and his enrichment. The man has lost probably several fortunes in the last 4 years. Don't be fooled. He has lost a lot of money. I'm sure that the Democrats probably promised him all kinds of stuff if he resigned. Hey, we're going to throw business your way. We're going to make sure you're affluent. We're going to pick up everything that you've lost. You're going to be great. All you need to do is resign. And he has refused. Let's see what Trump has done. The unemployment rate for minorities, such as myself, the lowest it's ever been in the history of statistics taking in this country. The Dow Jones Industrial Average today, I heard, reached a record high again. American manufacturing is increasing. Jobs are coming back to America. And after this Chinese scare, more jobs are going to come back to America. Real jobs, good jobs, manufacturing jobs are going to start coming back. Because manufacturers are going to realize, wait a minute, things can go very badly in China. at least in the United States. It may be more expensive, but we have a reliable, consistent manufacturing base. The North American Free Trade Agreement is gone. It has been replaced with, I forget the name of the, what is the name of the new, let's see. It's called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement, USMCA trade deal, which restores the balance and the favor to American industry. Those are the things and other things that Trump has done for us. He has created a sense of fear amongst our enemies. Our enemies are afraid of us because Trump has used the military to surgically remove those people who have made it a point to try to kill as many Americans as possible and to sow revolution and Islamic fervor throughout the world, militant Islamic fervor, because there's nothing wrong with religious fervor. He has also done his best to secure our borders. Look, however you feel about undocumented immigrants, let's call them that just so that I don't turn people off. The fact remains that we cannot just leave our doors open and let anybody walk into this country. A country without borders, without a common border, common language, and a common culture is not a country. It becomes balkanized. And for those of us who've been overseas, who've gone to countries like England and France and have made the mistake of getting close or driving close by these ethnic enclaves where even the police don't go in there, where people are no longer British, they're no longer French, they're something else, and they hate the West. They hate everything about the country that they're in. These are people that are not moving up in their societies. They have not integrated. That's the last thing that we need. And I, as an American with a tan, I guess you might say, I want there to be equal opportunity. I don't need any help, nor do I want any barriers put in my way. In the past, there were barriers, but now, pretty much, for the most part, if you're competent and you've got some skills, people are going to give you a shot. That's the America that I want to belong to. And every time these leftists try to take away from the legitimacy of the Trump presidency, they're trying to hold back this momentum that he's got. And it seems like every time they attack him, he gets even stronger. I always find it amazing that after a major attack, we hear about a major trade deal that he signed, or about some major initiative that he's launched, or about some court case that he won. I mean, there was a court case that was decided by a conservative judge saying that if you came to America to collect welfare, you're not going to get your citizenship. You know, and at the end of your green card period, it's not going to be renewed. I mean, why is it that it's okay for people to come to America to collect welfare? That's never been the case. People came to America to work, to build a life for themselves, not to, you know, feed off the fat of the land. There is no fat in the land. There is no free lunch. It is our lunch that they're eating. You're paying for it. Look at your paychecks. Look at how much money you pay in taxes. You'd be surprised to find out that 35 to 50% of your income is paid in taxes when you add up all of the real estate taxes, all of the taxes that you pay for gas, because I think it's 35 to 50 cents of every gallon is actually taxes. Your sales tax, your these different transaction taxes that you have, your personal income tax, Social Security tax, unemployment tax, now paid family leave tax. These are all taxes. This is money that's pulled out of your wallet, either with your consent or without your consent, that the law obligates you to pay. That's a tax. Now, we fought a revolution in the 1700s because we did not want to be taxed without having the opportunity to be represented. And here we are, where many things have kind of gotten away from us. And we have a president that's saying, no, no, the power belongs to the people. It is the people, not the government, that decide. It is with the consent of the governed that the government proceeds. Without the consent of the government, government cannot proceed. And that is a warning to Virginia. Because just because they won a small majority does not give the Democrats a mandate to try to undo every law that they think that Bloomberg wants them to pass. This Bloomberg-funded blue wave in Virginia is going to have to be undone. Because if not, there will be violence. Because these rednecks, and I know many of them in Virginia. Remember, I went to college in Virginia. They're not going to give up their guns easily. And they're not going to succumb to some policeman that tells them, you're going to have to give me your guns. I predict that if in Northern Virginia, if someone comes in and says, give me your guns, he's going to call a couple of his friends and there's going to be a standoff. And so the people will be the ultimate arbiters of what is right. And so thank you so much for listening. I'm going to go ahead and sign off now. Please come back next Tuesday from 5 to 7 p.m. for another installment of America in the Now. Until then, take care and God bless. Bye now. Is it broadcasting? Do I turn it down or?